Welcome to Dubs OT, your weekly Warriors podcast on thesportsvirus.com, featuring interviews with players, coaches, and media members. Dubs OT is brought to you by TPC Harding Park in San Francisco, home of the 2020 PGA Championship. Toscalito Tire and Automotive, your one-stop, on-the-spot auto service headquarters in San Francisco and the North Bay. Terzo, an authentic, upscale European restaurant in the Cal Hollow neighborhood in San Francisco. And Rose's Cafe, a favorite local hangout also in Cal Hollow. Now here are your hosts, Ray Woodson and Joe Castellano.
Tim Kawakami from The Athletic is our special guest today. We'll get to him in just a moment. Plus, we'll hear from Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, and Coach Steve Kerr. But first, we want to tell you about our favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. Live in San Francisco and love to play golf? Visit TPC Harding Park and purchase your two-year resident card, giving you immediate savings on golf and other programs at the park. Cut your green fees in half by purchasing your card today. Visit www.tpc.com/hardingpark for more information. Well, our very special guest today is Tim Kawakami from The Athletic. And, you know, Tim, before we even start talking about the Warriors and their winning streak and all that, how is everything going at The Athletic? I mean, I'm really excited about the venture that you guys are undertaking, and I wanted to know how successful it's been so far.
It's been pretty nice. You know, I had pretty high expectations for what I wanted to accomplish in the Bay Area. Of course, The Athletic is open in many different cities in Canada, going national now with baseball and various other sports, hockey. But in the Bay Area, I was pretty focused, and we wanted to be really good, and we wanted to put up some good numbers. And our company does not release publicly numbers. I'll just put it so we've tripled now what we were hoping for to this point, and probably pretty much doubled what we were hoping in a year, and that would be August 1st. So it's been great. It's been hectic. It's been a lot of work. And we are still completing into staff, and we're still, kind of figuring out exactly where we're going to go. But it's been nice. And having Andy Baggerly on to do some giant stuff has really been a turbo boost, along with all of our other great writers. It's just been a fun ride. And, it's the reception's been fantastic. Reception's among the teams, the executives, the players. But the numbers we're getting on the subscription count are quite, quite nice. So thanks for asking. It's been good.
Well, it can't hurt the popularity of the Warriors right now, and the other teams in the Bay Area. But the way things are going with the Warriors right now, I would imagine that helps things a lot. I mean, it has to be a lot of fun for everybody to cover it.
Yeah, exactly. And then we kind of based our operation on that we were going to be strong on the Warriors. It's myself as the editor-in-chief, Marcus Thompson as columnist, and Anthony Slater as a beat writer. Hard to beat that locally. And we really made a firm determination that we were going to do the Warriors as good as anybody or better. And knowing how hot the market is, knowing how hot nationally this is, knowing the personalities, how long the seasons go on, that was really how we built this. And it was not an incorrect decision, Joe, I'll tell you that. Not an incorrect decision at all. And, you probably read the stuff that, that Anthony does after every game, the five observations, really gets deep into video and unique aspects of the game. Marcus, obviously, with his columns on in-depth personality pieces on Curry and Durant and all those things. I do my own thing. It's how we kind of built this, the foundation of what we're doing, and now we're kind of springing off of everything. But, you can't go wrong when you're doing in-depth stuff on the Warriors.
No, that was a good call, and people can't get enough of this stuff. That's the thing. The other side of it is the demand for the content is incredible, and I do love the video breakdowns in particular. I was going to ask you, Tim, is it almost more interesting right now with the star players out? We know what they are, how good they are when they get the full squad. But just seeing how far they can go as a shorthanded team and continue to play at a reasonable level, and also seeing the different lineup combinations. Is that almost more interesting right now?
I think for really close followers of the Warriors, it is. Yeah, it's not the same thing. If there were 82 games of them blowing people out, I think fans would like it. We saw that probably 2 years ago, but it does get a little bit repetitive. They are better than everybody, and sometimes they get bored. They kind of just rolling the ball out, and they're going to be better than everybody. This is interesting, how Kerr is trying to figure it out, how they're resting guys. I think Draymond could have played the last several games, that they're being super cautious. And also, I think they want to see Jordan Bell. They want to see Jordan Bell play some minutes in that sort of Draymond Green role. They want to see how it works, and we're seeing it along with them because they don't know, you know. And we're seeing them work it out. Offensively, it's not quite as good, obviously. Defensively, they're figuring it out. You can see that. It's just they've got a lot of pieces that fit together defensively. Now, if they're going to not have Curry for a longer period of time, I think the offense is going to struggle. There's just you just can't duplicate what he means. But it is interesting to see how that defense links together when it's even Nick Young out there blocking the shot, when it's, you know, Jordan Bell scrambling around, when it's David West figuring out how to jump again. I thought he forgot how to jump, guys, by the way. He can jump this year. For me, you know, and you know me, I mean, I follow rotations. I follow what Kerr is doing. I follow what units are playing together. Now, you can't follow them now, right? There's nothing set. You know they're going to be at the starting group, and you know he's going to start the second and the fourth quarters with the David West, you know, group there. But beyond that, there's just kind of mixing and matching. You know, a lot of Omri Caspi, a lot of Patrick McCaw, a lot of things that, you know, I think fans are curious to see. So I do think it's more interesting. Now, it's clunkier, for sure.
Yes.
And they're more vulnerable, for sure. But, yeah, definitely more interesting. Right? You know, if we call this a chapter of a season, it's different. And I think, you know, you can appreciate the depth they have. You can appreciate the kind of creativity that Kerr and his staff have. And you can appreciate how these players are growing. You know, a lot of them are growing in front of our eyes.
Yeah, it's interesting when Steve Kerr calls a timeout in the middle of a possession. That made me laugh last night.
And you can hear him screaming, stop it, stop it, stop it, timeout, stop it.
It was a reset.
Yeah.
And they do, and they were good enough against a bad Memphis team. And, you know, you talk about the defense, and that's what I wonder about, for example, the Memphis game. Was it they're really good defensively, and they are linked together really well, or is it just a really bad offensive team they're facing?
It is a really bad, you know, obviously, without Mike Conley, it's a bad, bad Memphis offense, no question about that. But, you know, we've seen the Warriors, even when they've had most of their guys, lose clunky games just because they're not interested and they're not playing defense. I do think it's interesting. No Draymond, and they're putting together a string of good defensive efforts. Now, we'll see how this continues. They'll get the Lakers, and they've got some other things. And then they've got, obviously, the game in Houston is a big one, January 4th. I'm forgetting about that Cleveland game because we don't know who's all playing in that game. So I'm going to kind of put that one to the side. I think they'll all be back for that January 4th game against Houston. That's the one I'm looking at. I kind of get pushed past the big hyped game sometimes because, you know what, it's a big hype game. I'm certainly going to be watching the Cleveland game. But we know these two teams. We know how they measure against each other. Let's see the Warriors against this new Houston team again after Houston beat them in game one. But I'm sorry, I jumped past that Christmas game.
How much do those tests mean? I mean, you know, when you play the Celtics in Boston and you lose that game, you know, sort of gauging yourself at that point. And how much do you look at who's healthy at the time? Because, I mean, it's going to be different if you're playing them in the finals when you have a totally different roster.
Absolutely. You look at matchups. You just kind of look at, you know, hey, the Warriors lost that Christmas game last year, right? But that was a big turning point for them. That's where they kind of figured out, wait a minute, we're limiting Steph too much. Steph, you initiate, don't defer to Durant. Durant told Steph that after that game. And then you see them take off through various different, you know, versions because then Durant got hurt. And, you know, as we see in every season, there's all these little twists and turns. But last year's game against Cleveland was a loss. Yet it was one of the more important games for the Warriors to win the championship because they learned something about themselves. So I think that's what these are. It's not so much the win or loss, although it's obviously important. It's how they deal with the matchup. Is the matchup working? Okay, file that. Is it not working? Okay, file that and adjust the next time. So I think you'll look at how, you know, how they lost that lead to Houston in the first game of the season. How do they adjust to that in the second game, assuming everybody's back? And I am assuming Curry's going to be back for that one. And I think Draymond will be back very soon, probably Friday. So it's just kind of like, you know, at this point, with as much as they've proven, having won, I don't know, 210 regular season, no, more than that now, 230 regular season games in the Steve Kerr era, they don't need to win every game. And they've shown that because they've kind of thrown away a couple here and there just because they can. But against the big teams, the big moments, you look at the matchups. Yeah, Boston does give them trouble at certain things. Okay, the next time they play them, let's see how the Warriors deal with that. okay, Cleveland, Kevin Love, how they deal with it, how they deal with it. If Isaiah Thomas is back, which I do not think he will be for Christmas, obviously, but, you know, let's just see how these different little tweaks and little developments are handled by both teams and then play it out the next time they see it. It's just kind of it's a gradual, these two teams know they're going to be, you know, they played each other three times in the finals before, they're probably going to play in a fourth. So they know it's each step is not the most important thing. It's the next one that's even more important. We're just seeing it develop game to game.
Tim, you know, you mentioned Jordan Bell. And it's an interesting dynamic there between Bell, Steve Kerr, and Draymond Green. Yep. Draymond sort of his on-court mentor. And I think he kind of celebrates some of the wacky stuff that Bell does from time to time. And here's Steve Kerr trying to get him to run the floor every time. You know, it's the old saying with coaches, if they're mad at you, if they're trying to push you, that's a good thing. If they ignore you, then you're in trouble. So obviously in this early stage, Steve Kerr is trying to get more out of Jordan Bell. Do you see him responding to that so far?
Sure, I do. I mean, again, he's still doing the stuff here and there, but I think he understands when Kerr pulls him that he's got to go back and put his head down and give him another good 5 minutes. You know, it's not like he's sulking through this, and I think that's the important point. I think Bell realizes how good he can be, and I think he realizes how important to this team he can be. He can be important to this team in this year's playoffs. I think he will be important to this year's playoffs. So I think, well, next calendar year, but this season's playoffs, I should say. So I think he's picking that up. Again, he's flamboyant. He's going to do stuff like that. But you know what? So's Draymond. So's Steph. Mm-hmm. So's Durant in a certain way. Not Clay, though. But they do celebrate stuff. Sometimes they don't run back down on defense. I think what Kerr's saying is, Jordan, you have not reached that point right. Where you can do that. You are a good player. I want you to have good, you know, habits, but you're going to play, and I'm going to ride you, and I'm going to coach you, but you have not earned the point where you can stare down at a player on the ground like you did against the Lakers. You're not there yet, and if you think you're Draymond, you're not. You know, Draymond's allowed to do that because look what he's done. Look what the pulse on the wall he's got. Mm-hmm. So I think that's part of the Kerr thing, but you're right, exactly. If he didn't care about that stuff, he wouldn't be that important of a player. And Kurt does care because he wants the habits ingrained in him. And so when, you know, he's in the third year of the league and when he's maybe the Warriors starting, probably will be the Warriors starting center at that point, Kurt doesn't have to worry about it. He can worry about somebody else goofing around and doing certain things. He doesn't have to worry about Jordan Bell playing with Steph Curry, playing with Durant, playing these important minutes, you know, could be playing 30 minutes a game in a year or two. You don't have to worry about it. It's already baked in. And then so if you've got a little personality, it's on the edges. It doesn't screw up a play. And I think that's where Kerr is. But clearly, this is a guy who has to play. And I think Kerr accepted that at the beginning of the year and then resisted it after a couple goof-ups. But now he realizes. And I think the players themselves, I've always said this, the players are the ones who recognize who should be playing.
Yes.
They get who should be out there. And you can just tell by the body language that the Warriors stars, their best players, earnestly believe that Jordan Bell belongs on the court with them, and that's a big deal.
Yeah, we want to give a plug to the TK Show podcast that you have, and maybe you can give us a little glimpse into what went on in the conversation you had with the Warriors owner, Joe Lacob, because I know you guys got into a lot of different topics, and, you know, for me, it seems like, you know, the main thing is, how does he keep this going? This is so great. How do they keep it going and the momentum into the new arena?
Yeah, I mean, Joe, as tends to be when I talk, it was pretty wide range. He's ready for anything. He wants to discuss all topics. And, you know, it's about the salary. We know these stories, the projections that if they re-sign Klay Thompson and Draymond Green to put, you know, close to max deals, they're looking at a $300 million, $400 million payroll if you add the luxury taxes and all the repeater penalties and all those things. And just how ready is Lakin for that? And one, he's ready because they're going to be making a ton of money. Well, they're making a ton of money now. Once they go into Chase Center, it's going to be ridiculous. Two, they also have plans maybe to move the roster around a little bit. As he said to me, like, this year was to keep it status quo, to keep, you know, Livingston and Iguodala and Pachulia. That's what Kerr wanted. And you understand it because they did a lot of tear up 2 years ago, remember, to get Durant. So keep the status quo, but then maybe this year or especially going into the year after, I think they're looking to change things up. I think they might want to change the style a little bit. I think they might want to get a center who scores. I think, you know, they want to get a little younger. This is all the stuff they do. I know they do it. He talked about it. They've got names on the board that they're looking at. Say, can we get this guy in a year? Can we get this guy in 2 years? Can we get this guy in 3 years? What steps do we have to take to get all these guys, one of these guys, two of these guys? So I think that's what came out of, for me, I think maybe if people listen to it, it's the same thing. Just this isn't like we're sitting back and everything's great and we're just going to roll off the ball and we're going to be better than everybody. No, the way they got Durant was they planned for it 2 years in advance. The way they're going to, in their minds, continue this beyond the 4 or 5 year thing and make it a 6, 7, 8, 10 year thing is completely looking at every chance they have to get better, even if they're putting up 71 teams. Even if they've got two MVP players on their team, even if they got four Hall of Famers on the roster, they're always looking for that next edge. Doesn't mean they're going to do it, but they're always looking for it. And that's what Lakin's about. That's who he is. I've always said, if you want to know what Joe Lacob is, think of a poker game and the guy going all in every other hand. That's Joe Lacob. That's what he is. And he just burns for that stuff. And it drives some people crazy, but it, and sometimes he's, you know, maybe hard to deal with in there because he's so demanding, but that's how you get this good. That's it exactly.
Yeah. You think pennies, you get pennies. You think dollars, you get dollars. And, you know, he's definitely thinking big. I think looking at this roster, and, you know, obviously we're going way ahead here, but to the point where they're in the arena and your key players, your star players are in their 30s now. And so I think that's probably one of the things they're looking at, Tim, don't you think, is who's going to be the next young elite scorer or a guy they can count on who can put the ball in the bucket, you know, when these guys are a little older and, you know, maybe not on the court for every game.
I would agree with that. Absolutely. I'm sure they're looking at it. You know, it's, you know, Clay's 27, I think 28, Draymond's 27, 28. Their contracts are coming up though. So that's something that they have to look at. Steph is going to be 30. Durant's 29, going to be 30. Iguodala's certainly someone you cannot right in for the long term, Livingston either. All these things. And yeah, that's why McCaw is so important to them. That's why Bell is so important. But you're right. The scoring, I do think I've written this, so I feel safe saying it. I think they're looking at a scoring center. And if you look, there's some young ones out there who are properties of other teams. But I think they're looking at, you know, so they don't have everything isn't based on the perimeter. Everything isn't based on having, you know, motion on the outside. I think they'd like to get something going on in the middle, down the road. Obviously, they're a great team now. But, you know, I've mentioned Carl Anthony Towns. I've mentioned Kristaps Porzingis. And I've mentioned the big one, Anthony Davis. I just think those are three names. If you're a Warriors fan, I would just say if you want to know three names that they would be circling, those would be the three, just in conversation. And Anthony Davis is the one. He's not a free agent for a while. But when those situations, if he gets frustrated and there becomes a sense that New Orleans can't keep him, they might move him a year or two before he's a free agent. Those are the names I would throw out there. Again, just as conversation, just as things that they're kind of spitballing up on a board. But I do get the sense that they would like a younger, you know, in 2 years, Ray, Anthony Davis is going to be 27. So that's in 2 years. So this is the kind of stuff that's the math that they're looking at. And it, you know, won't be easy to do. You're talking large salaries. You're talking large amounts of talent, but, and you talk about, you know, they'd have to give up a lot, but when you think about where they might be going or where the issues that they're concentrating on, I just say, look for maybe a young, good, big player. And then they're trying to focus all their energies in that direction. Down the road. All down the road, all speculation.
Yeah, how many times have we said, how are they going to figure this out? And they figure it out.
Exactly. You know? That's why you have to pay attention to this stuff. Because, again, I was writing about them going after Durant 2 years before it ever happened. Because I knew they were thinking about it. And they never told me to stop writing it, by the way. Ever. Because it was true. And they wanted Durant to see it. I guess practically, and he did.
Sure.
They go from a super team to a super duper team if they get one of those centers, no doubt.
Yeah, 73 wins. We'll go ahead and go get Kevin. This is what they do.
Hey, thanks a lot, Tim. Really appreciate the time. Happy holidays. Good luck with the Athletic.
I appreciate it. Happy holidays to everybody listening. Happy holidays to both you guys.
That's Tim Kawakami from The Athletic. Dubs OT continues right after this.
In the late 90s, San Francisco celebrated the opening of Rose's Cafe at 2298 Union Street. Now, 20 years later, Rose's continues to provide a warm, friendly atmosphere, and you can still count on great food, Italian fare created using organic local produce, fresh seafood, humanely raised meats, and free-range poultry. Rose's bakes all of their own pastries and breads. Open 7 days a week, they serve breakfast, lunch, dinner, and brunch on Saturday and Sunday. Check out their menu and hours online at rosescafesf.com. The next time you're driving to or from AT&T Park, stop by Rose's Cafe in Cow Hollow at 2298 Union Street in San Francisco.
Well, Ray, Tim Kawakami was great. It was good talking to him about what's going on with the Warriors. And, boy, they really clamped down defensively in the second half against the Grizzlies. I mean, allowing the Grizzlies to score only 33 points in the second half, and the Grizzlies only shot 33% in the game. You know, and I know that team has been struggling, but with the Warriors missing all of their big-name guys, it's still pretty impressive to see what they did in this game.
Well, let's not sugarcoat it. I mean, I tweeted out during the game that this was a sack race in the mud. I mean, for both teams being as depleted as they are, it was a little rough at times. And Memphis, with the field goal droughts of 5 minutes and 6 minutes separately, what did they have, three total field goals in the third quarter? Yeah, without Mike Conley, I mean, they're just a rough watch right now. And the Warriors aren't that great offensively either, as we were talking with Tim Kawakami about, but they're good enough. They still have KD and Clay. So they're supposed to win these games, even as shorthanded as they are. But so, part of it is just they're playing a really bad offensive team. But you do like the offense, the defensive effort, I should say, that they've had the last several games without Steph Curry, without Draymond Green, without Zaza Pachulia, without Andre Iguodala from time to time. And what was it, missing five players against Memphis. And that to me is the fascinating part. You know, how many hands do they tie behind their back to beat a team? And, you know, albeit lesser teams, they're beating the Lakers. So the Lakers, you know, I do think they're on the come up. It's going to be a long-term arc for them, but they're a better team. I mean, they beat Houston, right? And Kuzma goes off for 38. Harden scores 51. But they're a team that's going to be more of a challenge, I think, for the Warriors. And also, going to L.A. is more of a challenge for the Warriors for various reasons. You know, it's a nice atmosphere down there. Not always conducive to sharp basketball, but you combine that with, you know, being shorthanded. You do have to like the defensive effort at times that the Warriors have put together, even without their defensive player of the year. And I think that's going to serve them well down the road.
Well, when they have all those players out, I mean, they seem to get a contribution from either Kevin Durant or Klay Thompson, a big contribution, or maybe both. But this time, you know, Durant didn't shoot as well. He still scored 22. Klay Thompson was just on fire in the first half. I mean, that was just – it was kind of like, you know, a couple, three games that he's had in his career where he's just not going to miss. And he was really not seen from in the second half because he had 27 of his 29 in the first half. But bursts like those make it so much fun to watch him play.
Well, yeah, he'll do that. He'll go volcanic from time to time. We have seen it. We've seen it in person and on TV as well. And you know, you can feel it, and everybody can feel it when it starts happening. And the thing about KD and Clay is, even when it's not happening at the offensive end, they're giving you the effort at the defensive end. They're both just exceptional two-way players now at this point in their career. And the other part of this, too, is you know that defenses are going to be drawn to KD. They're going to try to key on KD. And so it's up to Clay when it gets hot is to try to draw the defense away from KD a little bit. And there were a couple of times where Clay recognized that, and he's become a better passer on top of everything else. He's starting to recognize the double teams a little bit more, and he'll get it to an open Durant or an open Omri Caspi or whomever, Nick Young, you just name it. And that's the part of his game that's accelerated. The one thing that I would kind of fault Clay for, I don't know if I'd fault him, and just one little nick in his game this year, is he's not getting to the free throw line. He's barely over a free throw game, and that was part of his game that was improving over the years. It's not happening as much this year, for whatever reason. And, you know, that could be a combination of factors. But I think that, you know, just having those two on the floor, though, you know, even if you're missing Curry and Draymond and all these other guys, you still have two elite scoring threats out there, and you can get by, especially against these lesser teams.
Well, you mentioned teams keying on KD. Here's what he said about that.
Yeah, I'm smart enough to know. I mean, this is our, what, sixth game without all our guys, and Dre was out tonight and Sean out the last two games. Obviously, this team is not going to let me just play one-on-one or play free or, you know, let me do what I want. So, got to find ways to just be effective. And I miss shots, but that's not all. That's not the whole basketball game. I figure that out. It's a long season. I work on my shot enough to know that I'm going to have some lows sometimes. So, I don't expect it to happen next game, but if it does, so what? Just try to figure out how to, you know, how we can win.
Well, that's Kevin Durant talking about the team's keying on him, and, you know, he's made the adjustment. The whole team has. I mean, look, this team's won 10 in a row at the time of this podcast here, 6 in a row without Steph Curry, and I still think that's amazing. I thought they would have dropped a game here or there with Curry being out, and he's still going to be out. He's not even going to play in that Christmas game against the Cavs, which is disappointing. You wanted to see that for sure, but, you know, they're trying to be careful with his ankle.
Yeah, you know, but I'm reading some stuff. I'm just telling you. And we had Tim Kawakami on, and his colleague Anthony Slater wrote about this. Just that little crack of door opening that, you know, maybe it's really the player driving this, that he really wants to play. I don't, you know, none of us are doctors. None of us know for sure. We just know that the way these things roll out with these ankle injuries, you would assume that he wouldn't play Christmas Day against the Cavaliers. And why would you have him go out there if he's 70 or 80% for a game like that? But it sounds like they're just leaving open the slight possibility that he could play. I mean, again, I'm not a doctor, but my advice would be wait as long as you can. You can afford to do so, for crying out loud. You won 10 in a row. You could probably beat Cleveland without Curry if you're playing your game, if you've got, you know, everybody else. And maybe Draymond comes back. It sounds like he's getting ready to come back to practice. So he may play this weekend against the Lakers or Denver. You would hope against one of those two teams, and it's quite possible he's there Christmas Day against Cleveland. But my goodness, if you can avoid, you know, you want to avoid the long-term injury, right? The aggravation.
Right.
I think everything should point to January 4th against Houston. That's the one they really need to get.
Does the NBA tap the Warriors on the shoulder and say, you know, yeah, if Curry can play, I don't think they would, but we would never know about that, I guess.
Yeah, you know, we might eventually know about it, but, you know, the conspiracy theorists are going to be out there. They're always going to be out there about the NBA, especially when it comes to a big marquee Christmas Day game. And maybe you just kind of keep the hype machine rolling by saying, oh, could Steph play? Keep the interest going up that way. Game time decision. You never know. It'll be a letdown if he doesn't play, but I still think there are going to be a lot of eyeballs on that game. Here's the thing that gets me about these next few games, though. All right, regular Friday night game against the Lakers, regular time. But the weird home and home back-to-back with Denver, 5:30. You know, they play the Saturday games at 5:30 now. And then noon on Christmas Day. Those noon games scare the heck out of me.
Just not ready for it. You're tired, right? I mean, you're not even awake.
Yeah, it's not part of the body clock of most NBA players. Remember a couple of years ago they were in LA and they played that noon game on a Sunday and it was just a total disaster. I think they'll be a lot more focused for a game like this. And, you know, the nice thing for the players, at least on Christmas Day, is you're done by 3 o'clock and you at least have some of your Christmas with your family if you're celebrating that. But yeah, it's just a weird time. So I would anticipate kind of a janky start to that game.
We'll get back to our Warriors conversation right after this from Toscalito Tire and Automotive.
You have to admit, collecting NBA titles is a new trend for the Warriors, but at Toscalito Tire and Automotive, they've been winning since 1971 with quality tires and reliable auto and light truck repair at 6 Bay Area locations near you. Toscalito Tire and Automotive will take care of you like family, and they offer a nationwide warranty backed by the strength of the Goodyear Tire and Service Network. And unlike watching close Warriors games, going to Toscalito equals a stress-free life. With 4 Marin locations, plus the Marina in San Francisco and Vallejo, Toscalito, more than just a tire store.
you know, getting back to having players that are contributing, all different guys, Omri Caspi certainly is a valuable player, maybe more than we even thought. What he's been doing lately, he had 12 points in the game on Wednesday against Memphis, 5 of 7 from the field. And let's hear actually what Klay Thompson had to say about Caspi's attributes.
He just has a knack for knowing when his defender's not looking. And his touch around the basket's also unbelievable. And he's always moving. You know, when you see him work out one-on-one, you want to think he's the greatest athlete. But when he gets out there, he's in a 5-on-5 setting. He's so good at always, he's always in motion. And he just knows how to play the game.
Yeah, Klay talking, Ray, about how he moves without the ball. And that's the thing that I really love about watching him. I mean, sometimes in a game, it's great when you have a DVR going. You can go back, you can rewind, and you can kind of see, you know, how he's moving around without the ball. It's really a great example to all players that if you move without the ball, Klay Thompson does that a lot too, you're going to get your opportunities. And he's just so adept at being able to score underneath when he's moving around.
Yeah, and there are times, as we have seen, where they're not moving around at the moment, that they get a little stagnant on offense. So he's one guy who will cut and move. And that's been much more a part of his game this year. A lot of people have this image of Omri of being just a spot-up three-point shooter, right? And he's got a little bit more to his game than that, and he's emphasized that more this year, not shooting as many threes. But the key is he gives them another scoring option. He's, you know, not a premier scorer, but he's a guy who can put the ball in the bucket when things are not open for KD or Klay. And that's what they need right now. So in order for him to do that, he does have to move without the ball. And what you hope that does is get other people moving as well. And that's not happened consistently. We didn't see that a lot against Memphis. And there was a point where Steve Kerr did have to call a timeout in the middle of possession early in the game because people were just standing around. So, That's a big thing for Caspi to get himself involved in the game. And he's a veteran guy. He understands how he has to fit in with his team.
We'll continue our Warriors discussion right after this.
Are you looking for a great place for dinner? Then you really need to try Terzo, an authentic, upscale European neighborhood restaurant in the heart of Cow Hollow in San Francisco. When you sit down at your table at Terzo, you will feel the warm and welcoming ambiance. They make you feel like you're at home with great service and a delicious meal. Serving dinner only, Terzo offers unique food drawn from the Mediterranean region. They change their menu daily based on the local availability of product. Open 7 days a week, Terzo suggests reservations, but they do have a bar area available for walk-ins. Check out their website at terzosf.com for daily menus and hours. Drop by Terzo at 3011 Steiner at Union Street in San Francisco for an exceptional neighborhood dining experience and your private dining needs.
You know, another factor just kind of jumps out at you on the box score pretty much every game now, block shots, 8 of them. Everybody contributing in that area. And I was looking it up, Ray, that in the NBA, the Warriors are way out in front as far as block shots leading the NBA. I mean, San Antonio is averaging almost 6. The Warriors average 8.5 blocks a game. I mean, that's pretty amazing.
Nick Young blocked a shot. I mean, everybody's getting into the act now. But you look at this team and remember all the worries about when Bogut's gone and they're going to lose their rim protection. And here comes KD, and he's blocking shots like crazy. Draymond can block shots. McCaw can block shots. David West, as Tim Kawakai mentioned, he's rediscovered the ability to jump this year. And, of course, the key block to seal the game against the Lakers when Lonzo Ball drove to the hoop. They got a bunch of guys who can block shots. And not just at the rim, but at the perimeter as well. We've seen that a few times. And that can certainly fuel a fast break, although they only had 2 fast break points against Memphis, which stunned the heck out of me. But other than that, that's been a big aspect of this team this year. Now, block shots is a great stat. It doesn't always mean that you're more efficient defensively. But I think for this team, it's just another aspect that makes them so scary. They've got guys who can guard multiple positions. We know that. But they also have guys who can deny and start the fast break the other way. And, you know, this is, like I said, I think it's contagious with a lot of these guys. And you know, it's like the dunk contest between Klay and Zaza. I wonder if they have a block shot contest, too, going on.
They might. And Steve Kerr actually talked about why the Warriors have so many blocks.
You know, length and athleticism. And the guys work well together. You know, we have a pretty rare roster in terms of the length of our perimeter players. You know, it's not like the block shots are all coming from centers. I mean, we got guys, you know, like Clay and Andre and Sean. And, I don't know if KD qualifies as a perimeter player. He's, I don't know what he is, but he's a shot blocker. One of the best in the league. So just lots of guys. Patrick McCaw had a couple tonight. So a lot of guys who are active and have some length and athleticism.
Yeah, Kerr, talking about those blocks that are on the perimeter, Ray, and you know that is a big part of it because I don't know that a lot of people expected the Warriors to be this block happy when you know they're not known for having that big center down low, but everybody sort of gets involved in it.
Yeah, and I'm actually surprised at how many. I knew they had guys who could block shots, but just how many they have, and not only that, just the gap between them and the rest of the league. And you know, again, we're in December. They've had a lot of different lineups. They've had a lot of guys out, a lot of guys hurt. You know, for a lot of teams, this would be devastating. But for this team, it's not a problem. That's why they decided to load up the roster with the way they did, where they could go 12 or 13 deep. And some of these guys are replicating that defensive effort in terms of block shots. And when this gets all together, when they're all healthy, it'll be coming in the new year. It's going to be something to behold, and they've already won 10 in a row with a badly depleted roster. So, they're a little bit behind Houston. They lost the opener to them. I think as we speak, a half game behind them in the standings with the game coming up January 4th. But I don't think anybody doubts that when this team gets together and they're at all cylinders, they're going to be favored against every team in every playoff series.
Absolutely. All right, Ray, to finish up, we all have this person in our family that it's just like, how am I going to get this person a gift? I mean, they've got everything. So what do I do? I mean, they've got everything. I can't figure out a good gift. So for Steve Kerr, what do you get him for Christmas? I'm going to go with that for Christmas, Patrick McCaw is more aggressive because he has talked about his inconsistency as far as being aggressive scoring. So that would be my gift to Steve Kerr was it would be a more aggressive Patrick McCaw. Do you have a gift?
Jordan Bell running the floor every single time, going full sprint every single time. He would love to see that, and I think he will. He will. Maybe not at Christmas. Maybe on Christmas Day. Maybe it'll be a Christmas miracle, but I think he is going to see it very soon.
All right. I like it. I like the gifts for Steve Kerr. We'll have to let him know about those when we talk to him at the arena at some point soon. Ray, happy holidays to you. We'll be talking after that Christmas game. Look forward to analyzing that and talking again next week.
Yeah, happy holidays to everyone. Happy New Year, and we will talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Dubs OT Warriors podcast. Join Joe Castellano and Ray Woodson again next week on thesportsvirus.com.